She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 Diamonds on the soles of her shoes.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As a newspaper strike in Ohio nears the two-month mark, 24 workers represented by the Teamsters have reached an agreement. However, more than 170 represented by the Newspaper Guild are still on the picket lines. Under the new agreement, mailroom employees at the Vindicator will begin paying for part of their health care coverage, and the contract also calls for a wage freeze and signing bonuses. The workers represented by the Newspaper Guild are unaffected, and there are currently no plans to resume negotiations. The strikers have been publishing their own paper, the Youngstown Valley Voice, which has reached a weekly circulation of 54,000 copies. The Vindicator has a daily circulation of 65,000.
The International Association of Machinists is advocating its own AFL-CIO reform plan that includes a $200 million investment in a labor-owned cable news network, transparency in the AFL-CIO's budget, and a concentration of political efforts in union-dense states. IAM Communications Director Rick Sloan says that the labor movement is still vibrant.
The American labor movement may be a lot of things, but it's not politically impotent, it's not financially bankrupt, nor is it lacking in allies.
On Monday, the AFL-CIO's executive committee considered reform plans from several unions, including the SEIU, Teamsters, Communications Workers, and the Machinists. Sloan says the SEIU proposal goes too far in centralization of power.
We are not weak. We can grow this labor movement of ours, but we have to do it in a way that respects our democratic traditions and respects the autonomy of international and local unions.
A new election has been ordered at Toledo Hospital after the National Labor Relations Board upheld a judge's ruling that the hospital violated labor laws during a 2001 organizing drive. The United Auto Workers had attempted a drive at the hospital to represent nearly 3,300 nurses and other hospital staff. The board says that the hospital created an impression amongst 1,300 janitorial and cafeteria staff members that wage increases would be in jeopardy if the union won the election. The board ruled that those employees should be allowed a revote. The hospital also must post notices saying it violated labor laws during the 2001 election.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. The Economics of Has-Beens is a paper on productivity changes between older and younger workers caused by technology advances. It's written by Glenn McDonald of Washington University. And for the first time, it models and explains how older workers' skills are depreciated by new technology embraced by younger workers. Those younger, more technology-savvy workers tend to drive down the price of labor set by older workers, and one result is downward pressure on older workers' incomes. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
We know that global trade is totally out of whack for our country. We were promised that if we accepted the corporate ideology of global free trade, millions of new good-paying middle-class jobs would be created here to make all of those products that they said the USA would soon be exporting to places like China, thanks to the glorious magic of globalization. But it turned out to be globaloney. Rather than creating manufacturing jobs for workers here, the Walmarts and Nikes simply abandoned America, fleeing to places like China to make all those products. The corporate globalizers turned America from being a proud, strong, manufacturing nation into a nation dependent on imports. Our global trade balance is an embarrassment. We now buy $500 billion a year more in goods from abroad than we sell in the world market. China alone pockets $18 billion a year from us, selling that much more to us than they buy from America. What most Americans don't know, however, is what China and other nations do with this excess cash that they're amassing from our trade imbalance. They've been using much of it to buy the U.S. government's bonds, putting our country deeply, perhaps dangerously, in debt to them. Indeed, the central banks of just four Asian nations, Japan, China, Taiwan, and South Korea, now hold roughly 40% of Washington's public debt. In effect, they've quietly become our world banker, giving them inordinate power over America's purse strings. On everything from the value of the American dollar to the spending policies of Congress, these four foreign banks are in a position to yank our strings, and they are. They're now demanding, for example, that Washington protect the value of their investments in U.S. bonds by cutting back on federal spending, cuts that would come from the education budget, Social Security benefits, and other spending that we Americans count on. This is Jim Hightower saying, when did we vote for this?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Boy, breaking news here. Michael Chertoff, actually George W. Bush, making the announcement here today. Very interesting, suggesting that Chertoff is the guy.
In all of his roles, Mike has shown a deep commitment to the cause of justice and an unwavering determination to protect the American people.
We'll find out in a minute. Maybe
Mike
not.
Mike has also been a key leader in the war on terror.
Yeah.
On September the 11th, 2001, he was managing the criminal division of the Department of Justice, an 800-person operation devoted to enforcing our nation's...
And on he goes. This is George W. Bush's press conference today. I wish that someday he would learn how to pronounce 100. It's 800. It's like, I remember one of my first jobs, back in the early, you know, back in the 60s, when I first started in radio. I worked briefly in television also at WJAM Channel 6 in Lansing, Michigan. And there was a weather forecaster there, a weather reporter by the name of his stage name was Dennis Wayne. And Dennis was one of the most brilliant performers I've ever known in my life. He was incredible. I don't know if he's still around or not or whatever, but anyhow, this guy was incredible. But he had this one idiosyncrasy. Whenever anybody would say cloddy, he would go nuts. You know, like a DJ, this TV station also owned a radio station. And you'd be walking down the hall or something, and the radio station would be coming through the PA system, and somebody would say, Cloudy, and Dennis would say, it's cloudy, not cloudy. There are not clouds falling from the sky. Well, it's 100, not 100. Anyway, Michael Chertoff is really the story here. He just named Tuesday, today, here, as Secretary of Homeland Security. Yes, we're going to get that embarrassing Bernard Kertik thing behind us. Are we replacing an obsessive compulsive philanderer and stalker and a good buddy of organized crime with somebody bent on destroying the Constitution and eliminating civil liberties for Americans? Wait until you hear what Michael Chertoff has been doing all this time. By the way, greetings to you from me. Welcome to the program. Thank you for tuning us in. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks to Rama Schneider in particular for filling in for me yesterday as I had to go to the dentist, really, is the bottom line. You live in a little town like this, sometimes you don't have all those options about scheduling things. I can schedule these things around the show, but yesterday I couldn't. And in fact, on Wednesday, Rama is going to fill in for the third hour of our program. I'll be here for the first 2 hours to wrap this thing up. In fact, there was an interesting story in the front page of yesterday's Wall Street Journal about how much more dentists make than doctors. It was about two brothers, as I recall. One's a dentist, one's a doctor. The dentist was making $500,000, $500,000 a year, and the doctor was making $170,000. And you know, isn't this, boy, I can tell you. Anyhow, that's a whole other rant. Let's get back to Michael Chertoff. George W. Bush says, Michael Chertoff is a talented public servant and a key leader in the war on terrorism. Well, beyond that, he's done a few other things. From 1994 through 1996, remember those good years? Bill Clinton was president. The economy was rip-roaring along. The United States was at peace. The rest of the world thought well of us. Jobs were being created. The deficit was moving in the direction close to zero and toward a surplus. We hadn't quite got there by 96, but we were moving in the right direction. And that, by the way, was passed through Congress without one single Republican vote. Not one single Republican voted for the tax reform package that, you know, they would correctly call it a tax increase. It was. And it balanced the federal budget so that we don't have to borrow money from the Chinese. Well, you know that whole rant. Anyhow, I digress. In that period of from 1994 to 1996, Michael Chertoff was the special counsel to the committee investigating Whitewater. Yes, Whitewater. He was the lawyer who was in charge of finding out if and proving the details of Bill Clinton's nefarious involvement with a for-profit venture before he became president. No, we're not talking about a multi-billion-dollar company taking government contracts and paying hundreds of millions of dollars in fines for ripping off the government like Dick Cheney, or selling weapons of mass destruction to Saddam Hussein like Don Rumsfeld. No, what we're talking about was investing in a land deal 30 years earlier that lost money. What did he lose? $35,000 or something? You know, all the investors in aggregate lost $300,000. It was this little, but boy, the Republicans wanted to turn this into something. And Chertoff was their point man. He was the special counsel, that is, you know, special attorney to the committee investigating Whitewater, 94 through 96. But that ain't half of it. He was recently elevated to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the jurisdiction of Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. And this may be why one of the reasons why Bush thinks it's going to be so easy to get this guy through, because this required a confirmation by the Senate. And the vote was, as I recall, 87 or 88 to 1. The one person who voted against him was Hillary Rodham Clinton. And we only learned about this about 30-40 minutes ago, so I have not been able to find out why specifically she objected to his elevation to that post. I'm sure that we will find out, and I will report to you tomorrow. I would certainly love to know. It's going to come out, though, because Chertoff has been the boss of a guy by the name of Paul McNulty in the Eastern District of Virginia, the district court. And Paul McNulty has been prosecuting a guy named Zacharias Massawi. Remember Zacharias Massawi, the 20th hijacker? Maybe. Let's assume for the moment that actually he was. I have no idea. I haven't seen the evidence. Neither of you. We don't know. But it's interesting how the Bush administration, and I'm going to get into this in some more detail in just a few minutes, how the Bush administration has been, on the one hand, asserting that while for basically 800 years, British and American law, British preceding ours, of course, I mean, going back to 1215, King John, the Magna Carta, where at Runnymede, this meadow by the River Thames, King John was forced by the local rich, the local barons, the feudal lords, he was forced to sign the Magna Carta. From that time until 2 years ago, 3 years ago, under the Bush administration, if you were captured in hostility or committed a crime, that is, if you were a member of a foreign army or you had attacked the nation somehow or you were a criminal, you had specific rights. You either had rights as a prisoner of war under both the United States Constitution and the Geneva Conventions and a variety of other conventions as well. The treaties that were negotiated at The Hague and so on. Or, if you were not a prisoner of war, you were a criminal, or you were charged as a criminal, in which case you had rights under the Constitution of the United States, here in the United States, and, you know, similar rights in other democratic nations. Well, George W. Bush has come along and said, well, no, we're going to create a third category. In this, he's doing something that King Charles I tried to do back in 1627, rather unsuccessfully. And that is a third category of persons who have no rights because the king says so. As I said, we'll get to that in just a minute, but I want to stick with Chertoff here. Chertoff, rather than saying, okay, people have no rights because the king says so, although he has supported that position, but that's basically Alberto Gonzalez's big shtick. Chertoff instead has been saying, well, you know, this criminals have rights thing, the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendments of the Constitution, for example, this idea of criminals having rights, let's just do away with that. He's been leading an assault on due process, and he's been doing it in the Massawi case. For example, the entire case against Massawi is based on the testimony, or not the majority of the case, let's say, is based on the testimony of the government, what the government calls their star witness against him. Now, the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution, as I recall, in fact, I should dig out my Constitution. Here we are, Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district, blah, 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 and be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Well, you get it. The Sixth Amendment of the Constitution, pretty unambiguous. If you're charged with a crime, you have a right to be confronted by your accuser. Michael Chertoff doesn't believe so. In fact, in the Massawi case, he has said, no, Massawi does not have the right to be confronted by his accuser. Why? Because his accuser's out of the country. Well, where out of the country is he? Well, he's in U.S. custody. Out of the country. Like Guantanamo. This is nonsense. To say that, the federal government is incapable of producing a witness against somebody charged with a crime because he's out of the country when he's in federal custody. This is clearly a man who does not believe in the rule of law in the United States. And we're going to put him in charge of Homeland Security? It sure looks to me like Chertoff and Bush and Gonzalez, that these guys, they're creating this third category, which we'll get into in just a second, and they're taking the original categories of prisoners of war under the Geneva Conventions, which Gonzalez has said he thought should be rewritten or revisited, and criminal law, which Chertoff is saying, well, you know, we can just ignore the Constitution, that they're just saying, well, let's just toss all this stuff out. You know, the last time a major Western democracy did that was in 1934. I think you remember the results. This is not a good sign, my friends, that Michael Chertoff has been nominated for this job. This is not a good sign at all. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Yeah, let's do it again. Well, that's what he's doing. I mean, this is George W. Bush. I mean, this Chertoff is, you thought Bernard Kerik was bad. You thought Ashcroft was bad. You ain't seen nothing yet. Folks in our chat room wanting a Thomas Jefferson alert. We had a few inches of snow here in the last 2 days here in the People's Republic of Vermont. And Thomas Jefferson, the mouse who lives just outside the window and just outside the studio here on the hillside. We've got a couple hundred feet of hill that goes right up off the back of the building. And there are mouse tracks in the snow this morning. So good sign. There are also cat tracks, but no evidence of a collision between the two. So Thomas Jefferson seems to be intact. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, our website, tomhartman.com. However you spell it, it'll get you there. And if you want to drop into our chat room, the live chat button will bring you to the message board section, where you will find a link to the live chat room. You can drop in and participate with some of the finest minds on the entire, I am not exaggerating, on the entire internet. Yes, I realize there are some, you know, 400 or 500 million people on the internet right now. Nonetheless, these are the finest minds on the entire internet. I want to get into the history of human rights here in the United States, not by way of history lesson, but by way of telling you what George W. Bush is trashing, what we are losing, and how we got it in the first place. And the struggle is really quite remarkable. Get into some of the details of this. Just by way of information, our program today, the first hour, first they came for the terrorists. Did you speak up? In our second hour, should you be fox-proofing your cable box? There's a way to do it now. And we're going to have our NLP class, our tools for activism, for progressive activism today, how to plant an idea in someone's unconscious. And our third hour today, why are conservatives falling all over themselves for this coronation of George W.? What's up with this? What's going on with these corporations? Our quote for the day, the first from White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, and we're going to be talking about this more in the second hour of the program, on whether Armstrong Williams was the only journalist being paid by the administration. McClellan saying, I'm not aware of any other arrangements of that nature. In other words, he's not saying there aren't. He's just saying that when the subject came up, he said, please don't tell me, so I'm not aware. He's not aware of any. On the other hand, Armstrong Williams, in a comment to Nation columnist David Korn, said, this happens all the time. There are others. And I'll give you some, I think my take on this may surprise you. There are some clearly there are some laws that have been broken here, and this makes the CBS thing look irrelevant, inconsequential. And we're going to get into that too. We got a whole bunch of stuff here for you. It's going to be a fascinating day. First, let's go to the phone lines. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Welcome back.
Thank you.
The question is, yesterday I had this rule against listening to conservative radio.
Yeah.
It sickens me.
Well, it's just good for your mental health to avoid it.
Oh, right? I caught one yesterday with a gentleman, a Jewish gentleman, who was ranting that now we should lock up all the homeless because of the thing in New York City and give them at least 90 days in a jail. And, you know, this is the way to deal with useless, wasted, homeless people.
Hmm.
And I just...
I would say first, you said he was a Jewish gentleman. Does this have anything to do with his being Jewish? It doesn't.
Yeah. Well, he also doesn't believe in the North American or American Holocaust of the Indians, which I find to be ridiculous for a Jewish person.
Oh my. But, well, I didn't hear the program. I don't know who you're talking about, so I really can't comment on it. But you know.
No, but that's the kind of stuff that's going on, Tom.
I know it's turned, unfortunately. Conservative talk radio has turned from issues-based radio to hate-based radio in the United States, and it's a real tragedy. I mean, in the early days, at least Limbaugh used to talk about issues. It's a real shame. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, it's the return of cable's most talked-about show, Growing Up Gotti. It all starts at 9.
Did my ex-husband send you here? Just drive me crazy.
Followed by the new real-life series, Caesars, 24/7. An all-access, behind-the-scenes pass to Sin City's hottest casino, Caesars Palace.
Sometimes people hook up at the table.
Growing Up Gotti premieres at 9, 8 Central, followed by the new real-life series, Caesars, 24/7. Tonight, only on A&E.
I just won $1 million!
Yes!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As a newspaper strike in Ohio nears the two-month mark, 24 workers represented by the Teamsters have reached an agreement. However, more than 170 represented by the Newspaper Guild are still on the picket lines. Under the new agreement, mailroom employees at the Vindicator will begin paying for part of their health care coverage, and the contract also calls for a wage freeze and signing bonuses. The workers represented by the Newspaper Guild are unaffected, and there are currently no plans to resume negotiations. The strikers have been publishing their own paper, the Youngstown Valley Voice, which has reached a weekly circulation of 54,000 copies. The Vindicator has a daily circulation of 65,000.
The International Association of Machinists is advocating its own AFL-CIO reform plan that includes a $200 million investment in a labor-owned cable news network, transparency in the AFL-CIO's budget, and a concentration of political efforts in union-dense states. IAM Communications Director Rick Sloan says that the labor movement is still vibrant.
The American labor movement may be a lot of things, but it's not politically impotent, it's not financially bankrupt, nor is it lacking in allies.
On Monday, the AFL-CIO's executive committee considered reform plans from several unions, including the SEIU, Teamsters, Communications Workers, and the Machinists. Sloan says the SEIU proposal goes too far in centralization of power.
We are not weak. We can grow this labor movement of ours, but we have to do it in a way that respects our democratic traditions and respects the autonomy of international and local unions.
A new election has been ordered at Toledo Hospital after the National Labor Relations Board upheld a judge's ruling that the hospital violated labor laws during a 2001 organizing drive. The United Auto Workers had attempted a drive at the hospital to represent nearly 3,300 nurses and other hospital staff. The board says that the hospital created an impression amongst 1,300 janitorial and cafeteria staff members that wage increases would be in jeopardy if the union won the election. The board ruled that those employees should be allowed a revote. The hospital also must post notices saying it violated labor laws during the 2001 election.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. The Economics of Has-Beens is a paper on productivity changes between older and younger workers caused by technology advances. It's written by Glenn McDonald of Washington University. And for the first time, it models and explains how older workers' skills are depreciated by new technology embraced by younger workers. Those younger, more technology-savvy workers tend to drive down the price of labor set by older workers, and one result is downward pressure on older workers' incomes. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I think it's time for a change.
Time for a change. Back to democracy. I am so unhappy there's not an election tomorrow that I can do so. But what we need to do, we collectively, we who are awake in America, we who have seen through the lies and distortions of the right wing, we who get it, how, you know, what the agenda of these folks, what we need to do is we need to be holding the feet of the Democrats in Congress and in, you know, in the House of Representatives and the Senate, and frankly, in my opinion, the Republicans as well, to the fire. Because what is going on is not only anti-democratic small d, it's also anti-Republican small r, and flies flat out in the face of the history of the, you know, relatively noble and certainly sometimes ignoble, but nonetheless, the history of both parties. Of both parties. Welcome back, by the way. DemocraticMatch.com, one of our sponsors. Your politics say a lot about you. They're a premium featured dating site where Democrats and other progressive thinkers can find a partner who shares their worldviews. They have thousands of liberal members waiting to meet you. DemocraticMatch.com should be entertaining. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Today is the third anniversary. Today, a very significant day, the third anniversary of the opening of America's first concentration camp since we interred, actually interred is the wrong word. I used that word in my article. It should be interned or incarcerated. Interred means buried. You know, you can't always get it right. Anyhow, since we incarcerated Japanese Americans during World War II, we had concentration camps during World War II for the Japanese Americans. We've done it again. 3 years ago today, we opened the first concentration camp in the United States since World War II under the Bush administration. No surprise. To provide for the detention of uncharged, untried, unconvicted individuals who may be held for the rest of their lives without ever facing criminal charges. The rest of the world is looking at this and looking at us and shaking their heads and just wondering what is going on. We just finished construction of the fifth concentration camp in Cuba. It's called, by coincidence, Concentration Camp 5. And the Bush administration is asking Congress for $29 million to build Concentration Camp 6, also in Cuba, making good use of that land down that we have down there. This is a clear violation of a long history of American law, and that is that the Constitution very clearly states in Section 2, what is it, Part 9? I'd have to find it here. It's Section 2, something 9. Anyhow, of Article 1 of the Constitution. See, the first three articles of the Constitution, Article 1 of the Constitution defines the rights, powers, privileges, and limits of the legislature. Article 2 is about the executive, the president. Article 3 is about the judiciary. It lays out the Supreme Court and federal court system. You know, just very, very straightforward. And in Article 1, the part of the Constitution that talks about the powers of the legislative branch, it says very clearly that only the legislature can suspend habeas corpus. I mean, this is habeas corpus is fancy Latin for produce the body, and it goes back to 1215, really. It goes back to 1215 when the feudal lord said to King John, we're not going to take it anymore. And Article 38 and 39 of the Magna Carta. Now, we're not talking about some new law. This is the Magna Carta, 1215. In the future, no official shall place a man on trial upon his own unsupported statement without producing credible witnesses to the truth of it. No free man shall be seized or imprisoned or stripped of his rights or possessions or outlawed or exiled or deprived of his standing in any other way, nor will we proceed with force against him or send others to do so, except by the lawful judgment of his peers, of his equals, or by the law of the land. Well, that gave privileges to the wealthy, to the feudal lords, but not to average people like you and me. In 1627, King Charles threw five knights in jail because they weren't paying taxes to him for being knights. Knights were then sort of like the middle class, I suppose. They weren't noble. You could aspire to nobility by being a good knight, but they weren't nobles. They're kind of high-paid employees of the nobility. And he threw these five guys in jail, and they sued him and said, we should be freed on bail if we've been charged with a crime, and if we're not charged with a crime, we shouldn't be here in jail. And he said that he had the right to throw anybody in jail he wanted any time other than the rich, because of the Magna Carta, per speciale mandatum domini regis. In other words, under the special powers, God gives the ruler. Well, Parliament didn't stand for it. The year later, there was a revolt in Parliament, and they passed a law called the Petition of Right Law, which was followed in 1640 by the First Habeas Corpus Act and 1679 the Second Habeas Corpus Act. Again, habeas corpus, Latin, produce the body. What it really means is free this person. Let this guy out of jail. That's what habeas corpus means. Let this person out of jail. Very simple. And this is so much a part of British law. And this is so much a part of British law and goes back to forever in terms of British law, that in 1815, when the third George to rule England, King George III, we now have the third George to rule America, right? George Washington, George Bush Sr., now we got George Jr. So we got George III here now. But anyhow, when King George III of England in 1815 got possession of Napoleon Bonaparte, because they defeated him at the Battle of Waterloo, and so he goes to this British flagship and surrenders to the British. And the king wants to hold him and then exile him to a distant island. Does that sound familiar? Just like Cuba. I mean, it wasn't, but it was. Well, he didn't have the legal authority to do that. Parliament had to do it. Parliament had to pass a law. They had to pass a law to do it. In fact, the law was called, and I quote, "An act for the more effectually detaining in custody of Napoleon Bonaparte," end quote. We have suspended habeas corpus in the United States. Abraham Lincoln did it. He got an act of Congress, because only Congress can suspend habeas corpus. There was an uprising in the 1870s, 1871 or 72, as I recall, that Ulysses S. Grant, 1871, Ulysses S. Grant was all upset about it. It was during Reconstruction. South Carolina wasn't quite sure they wanted to join the Union again. And the Ku Klux Klan was a very powerful force then. And in 1871, Grant went to the Congress and asked them to pass a law suspending habeas corpus in South Carolina. They did. It was called the Ku Klux Klan Act. But George Bush has not gotten Congress to say, yes, George, you can hold anybody you want anytime you want. He has not. This is against the law. And Alberto Gonzalez is all in favor of it, which is why this man should not be confirmed as the head law enforcement officer of the United States. And now we've got another guy here who's also all in favor of it, Mr. Michael Chertoff, another cheerleader for this. He shouldn't be in there either, in my opinion. Let's take a few phone calls, see what your thoughts are on this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
How are you today, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Rick?
Well, first of all, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but former Senator Zell Miller has now signed on as a Fox News consultant.
Oh, gee, what a
you
surprise.
You aware of that?
A week or so ago, I heard it was coming, yeah.
So I guess he's found his niche.
Yeah.
Could I maybe
He's found his money pot is what he's found.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
May I switch topics, though, or do you want to?
No, you can say something if you want, but I'm going to come back to this. What did you want to say?
Well, I was just kind of following this saga of Tom DeLay. I was watching Capital Gang Saturday night, and Mr. Novak, Robert Novak, had some rather critical things to say of Mr. DeLay, and then I was on the Internet yesterday and read a column, and apparently the Republicans backing out on their move to protect Mr. DeLay against any ethics problems he may fall.
Yeah.
He may run afoul.
He's starting to get politically radioactive, and they're all backing away from him.
That was the thrust of Mr. Novak's column and comments, and the fact that they may have to just ditch this guy as majority leader, and they're already grooming, I guess, a guy from Ohio named John Boehner as his possible replacement. So,
yeah. In fact, there's competition already. They're jockeying for the position.
That's, you know,
it's incredible. I gotta move along. But thanks for the call and for raising that. It's interesting. It's the trials and tribulations of Tom DeLay. Another guy in the Republican Party who really doesn't think the law counts for all that much. Thank you very much. Let's see here. Rich in Chicago's on the line. I think is that Rich in Chicago?
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Got the right button. Okay. Hey, Rich. What's up?
Hey, how you doing? Hey, the other day I was doing a little bit of research and just kind of looking up different definitions of fascism, but I came across his name, Leo Strauss, and Straussarian philosophies, and Alan Bloom, and Wolfowitz's name. I've never heard you talk about this before. I almost fell out of my chair when I was reading this philosophy, and it is so where we're at today.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about it?
Well, I have talked about it at length, but it's probably been 5 or 6 months since I did a good long, hour-long rant about Leo Strauss and what he was all about in the neocons. I wrote a column about this for Common Dreams about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, a month ago, called The Power of Nightmares. And if you go to tomhartman.com and click on Articles on Democracy, it's probably the third or fourth down from the top.
Okay, I got to read it because I almost fell out of my chair when I was reading this guy's beliefs and what he subscribed to and what's going on today. I was like, this is it. This is like the roadmap.
Well, not only that, Strauss's notion was really in many ways not that different from classic traditional thought. Russell Kirk, the conservative mind, which I was just rereading again this weekend, he wrote this in 1953, and it was the book that got William F. Buckley and Barry Goldwater and got all of these guys energized and created the modern conservative movement. Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind, and Kirk bases the conservative mind on the writings of Sir Edmund Burke back in 1790, and Burke was writing in large part in response to the French Revolution. And the writings of John Adams. And, you know, what happened was the French Revolution happened. And at first, I mean, you know, Jefferson's famous quote about every now and then the tree of liberty must be watered with the blood of patriots and all this. He was talking about the French Revolution. And at first, everybody thought it was going to be like the American Revolution and France was going to become a democracy. And it didn't happen. Instead, they got the terrors. You know, they just had this horrific situation. And that ultimately led to Napoleon. And so, in response to that, the conservative movement of the early 1800s, or the early 19th century, evolved, and most of it came out of the writings of Sir Edmund Burke, who was writing 1790, which was, you know, right there with the French Revolution, or a little later, anyhow. And Burke was basically saying that society must have classes and orders.
Yeah.
That religion, even if those in power don't believe it, it's better if they don't believe it, because then they can more effectively use it to manipulate the people.
Correct.
That religion should be used as a tool to control the masses. And it's interesting how Marx was taking the opposite position. It's just fascinating to trace the history of all this stuff.
Do you see this happening on, like, Fox Television and the way that they bring these things up? Isn't it very Straussarian then?
It is. That's what this administration is all about. But what's really fascinating is the core pillars of conservative thought that Kirk outlines and that Strauss outlines. Strauss was teaching at the University of Chicago back in the 60s and 70s. And he was basically teaching Russell Kirk, which is a connection that most people don't make. That those philosophies, that the ends justify the means, that it's appropriate, in fact, it's even your obligation to lie to the people if it's going to create a better, a larger good, a greater good down the road. That religion must be manipulated, yet religion must be held high at all times, because that will create the moral compass, because the assumption is that people are essentially evil, and that there should be orders and classes, and that there's a natural ruling elite within society, and that natural ruling elite shouldn't necessarily be by birth, as it was in kingdoms, but instead should be a meritocracy, and the proof of merit is wealth. In other words, we should have rule by the wealthy. That thinking, that mindset, which are the modern-day tenets of conservative thought, And they're and you read real conservatives, and they're right up front about this. Mm-hmm. They're right up front about it. I mean, Russell Kirk, the conservative mind, just so clear about it. William F. Buckley's writings, unambiguous. That is also the worldview of Osama bin Laden. That is also the worldview of al-Qaeda. And there was this brilliant British documentary done called a three-hour BBC special that ran in the month of October, the last 3 weeks of October of last year. Two months ago. Called The Power of Nightmares. And you can see it on the web. There's bootleg copies floating around. It traced the rise of the neoconservative philosophy from Leo Strauss in the 1950s and the rise of al-Qaeda from an Egyptian scholar who was just 200 miles away from Leo Strauss in, as I recall, Kansas, in the same year, who went back to Egypt and started the Islamic Brotherhood, which then morphed into Islamic Jihad, which then morphed into al-Qaeda. And how these two organizations both came out of the same philosophy, and they share the same philosophy, and that's why they are such, you know, perfect enemies for each other, because they share the exact same worldview and are willing to use the same tools.
Well,
but they just, you know, each want the other, you know, they have different religions that they want to push forward, and they have different notions.
Thanks, Tom. I want to hear about the solution to this.
Yeah, well, the solution is to wake people up.
We
need to inform people. Thanks for the call. It's good to hear from you. Rich. Yeah, thanks, Rich. I do appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
With a Workers' Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. In New York City last week, labor unions, food retailers, and small business owners came together to form a coalition to protest the construction of a Walmart in Queens in 2008. The coalition claims that Walmart sets a precedent of lower standards for hardworking men and women throughout the world, Rebecca Miles has the story.
At the press conference at New York City Hall, Brian McLaughlin, president of the New York City Central Labor Council, talked about his concerns over a Walmart being constructed in Queens.
You know, New York City is unique. It's a city of communities. In Queens County, where I come from, it's Flushing, it's Little Neck, it's Regal Park, it's Woodhaven, it's Ozone Park, it's Howard Beach, it's Maspeth, and in the other boroughs as well. And in a city where mass transit is essential, we know that Walmart comes to an area, undermines the competitors in that area with temporarily low prices. Once they destroy their competitors, people are forced to travel longer distances, and the theory of community is undermined. The quality of life in the community is undermined.
Walmart is the biggest private employer in the U.S. with 1 million workers. And while politicians welcome the hiring of new employees the retail giant represents, the jobs are short-term. For every 2 new hires, 3 jobs leave the community. Steve Barrison from Small Business Congress had this to say.
Walmart has a history of being a bad neighbor in the communities in which they live. They have a history of mistreating their employees. They are the most sued company in America. There have been numerous violations of the way they have treated their workers. Do we need another box store? Do we need another employer coming in here and instead of adding to our communities, draining our communities?
200 communities across the country have already said no to Walmart. So what will Mayor Bloomberg and the City Council decide? For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night. I roller skated to your door at daylight.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. We got a whole bunch of calls here. Try and take them fairly quickly if that's all right with you folks. Charles in Albany, New York on the line. Hey, Charles, what's up?
This is an issue that's been, you know, around my head, and I've never really gotten to it. And
need you to speak up a little, Charles.
I'm sorry. This is an issue that's been on my mind for a long time, but no one, I haven't really gotten to it because it's sort of off the radar. And that is, I mean, it was unprecedented to me coming from a political science perspective. All of those people who were affiliated with the Republican Party, whether they were military or they were politicians or...
What's the point, people. Charles?
My question is, now that these people are in the wind, obviously they betrayed the Republicans and the Democrats didn't really succeed in this past election in terms of Congress, in terms of the federal election.
Right. Where are you going with this?
What kind of backup are we now giving them? Because now they're flipping in the wind, whatever the expression is.
The Republicans?
What has the Democrats done? Saying, "Hey, listen."
What I'm seeing is both parties have lost their way. I mean, the Republican Party has been completely bought and sold by corporate America. About a third of the Democratic Party has been, maybe two thirds, depends on how you figure it. And they're completely losing their bearings, and we need to help them get them back. We need to just say, you know, sorry guys, this isn't going to work anymore. Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Alfred, what's up?
Well, you were mentioning about the British Charles the First, and there are two books that I read some time back, and I tried to get my notes. A Monarchy Transformed Britain by Mark Chislansky, 1603 to 1714, and Britain's Forging the Nation, 1707 and 1837 by Linda Colley, C-O-L-L-E-Y.
Yeah.
And it definitely points out that the same thing that's going on now, that we got our Bill of Rights really from the British unwritten Bill of Rights.
Well, that's right. It was
excessive bail, exorbitant fines, cruel or unusual punishment.
Absolutely. Right. And the founders all wrote about this extensively to each other, and you'll find, you know, references to it in the Federalist, Federalist Number 8,
Federalist
Number 84.
So those are good books for your listeners to read, because from those liberties came freedom from arbitrary arrest, from non-parliamentary taxation, from
rehabilitating
of troops, and from being governed by martial law.
There you go, Alfred. You're absolutely right. And this is the beginning. This was the beginning of constitutional law, leading up to the Revolution of 1832 in Britain, which when Parliament basically took all the power from the king. But really, after 1215, then the 1628 Petition of Right Law, and then the 1640 Habeas Corpus Act, the 1679 Second Habeas Corpus Act, and now Bush wants to roll back what 800 years of law. It's incredible. Tom Hartman here with you, exposing the con and conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As a newspaper strike in Ohio nears the two-month mark, 24 workers represented by the Teamsters have reached an agreement. However, more than 170 represented by the Newspaper Guild are still on the picket lines. Under the new agreement, mailroom employees at the Vindicator will begin paying for part of their health care coverage, and the contract also calls for a wage freeze and signing bonuses. The workers represented by the Newspaper Guild are unaffected, and there are currently no plans to resume negotiations. The strikers have been publishing their own paper, the Youngstown Valley Voice, which has reached a weekly circulation of 54,000 copies. The Vindicator has a daily circulation of 65,000.
The International Association of Machinists is advocating its own AFL-CIO reform plan that includes a $200 million investment in a labor-owned cable news network, transparency in the AFL-CIO's budget, and a concentration of political efforts in union-dense states. IAM Communications Director Rick Sloan says that the labor movement is still vibrant.
The American labor movement may be a lot of things, but it's not politically impotent, it's not financially bankrupt, nor is it lacking in allies.
On Monday, the AFL-CIO's executive committee considered reform plans from several unions, including the SEIU, Teamsters, Communications Workers, and the Machinists. Sloan says the SEIU proposal goes too far in centralization of power.
We are not weak. We can grow this labor movement of ours, but we have to do it in a way that respects our democratic traditions and respects the autonomy of international and local unions.
A new election has been ordered at Toledo Hospital after the National Labor Relations Board upheld a judge's ruling that the hospital violated labor laws during a 2001 organizing drive. The United Auto Workers had attempted a drive at the hospital to represent nearly 3,300 nurses and other hospital staff. The board says that the hospital created an impression amongst 1,300 janitorial and cafeteria staff members that wage increases would be in jeopardy if the union won the election. The board ruled that those employees should be allowed a revote. The hospital also must post notices saying it violated labor laws during the 2001 election.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economics of Has-Beens is a paper on productivity changes between older and younger workers caused by technology advances. It's written by Glenn MacDonald of Washington University. And for the first time, it models and explains how older workers' skills are depreciated by new technology embraced by younger workers. Those younger, more technology-savvy workers tend to drive down the price of labor set by older workers, and one result is downward pressure on older workers' incomes. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Why is it that when George W. says he's going to reform something, I instinctively want to grab my money, my liberties, my family, and flee to the woods? For the Bushites, the word reform means deform, to monkey wrench the system so the rich get richer and the rest of us get stooked. Still, there's one system crying out for real reform, the bankruptcy process that corporations are using to stiff their employees, letting CEOs simply walk away from binding contracts on wages, health care, and pensions. At present, the big abusers are United, U.S. Air, Delta, and other major airlines that have been poorly managed and now are being squeezed by their bankers and jet fuel suppliers. Screaming poverty, these airlines have rushed to bankruptcy court, demanding that judges allow them to abrogate legitimate contracts they had negotiated in good faith with their pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, and others. These are loyal, long-time, hard-working employees who already have made concession after concession, giving back billions of dollars that were owed to them. Yet the CEOs are demanding still more, using the federal bankruptcy law as their weapon for this mugging. This one-sided law apparently legalizes end runs to let corporations weasel out of their obligations. What an interesting lesson for all of us who've been taught that a contract is sacrosanct, a legally binding giving of one's word. Here's my question. Why do the CEOs only target the workers for cost-cutting? Why not tell Exxon and the other fuel suppliers, no, we can't pay your gouging prices, so we're abrogating those commitments? Or why not say to the super wealthy bankers, you take some of the pain too? Why do they only pound their workers? This is Jim Hightower saying, I don't know about you, but on my flights, I'd rather have a disgruntled banker or fuel supplier than an angry pilot, flight attendant, or mechanic. It's time to fix the bankruptcy law that has legalized the corporate robbery of workers.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program, where reason is our lifestyle choice, among other things. Speaking of the rights that the Bush administration wants to roll back, there's not only a war on the broad concept of civil rights, on, for example, the core foundational civil right upon which virtually all others are based, which is habeas corpus, which basically means let people out of jail unless they're either convicted or accused of a crime, and if they're accused, give them the right to make bail, unless you can prove that they're such a threat to society that you should hold them, and then you have to prove that in a court of law. They have the right to be accused, face their accusers, and evidence has to be presented, and a judge or a jury has to rule. Nonetheless, not only do they want to roll back these, both, with Bush's nomination of Gonzalez and now this new guy, what's his name here? Chertoff, Michael Chertoff. Not only do they want to roll these things back, but they also want to roll the rights of women back to the veil. Back to, you know, Bush cites the Bible as his authority. And not, you know, and a lot of Christians say, well, the Old Testament stuff, you know, we can leave that behind. The Leviticus stuff about, you know, selling your daughters into slavery is okay as long as you get a decent price, and you can't wear clothes made out of more than two kinds of fabric, and you can't eat shellfish, and I mean, basically, you know, the old kosher laws and all this kind of stuff. A lot of modern day folks, modern day Christians and many Jews say, well, you know, that's kind of old stuff. I mean, I realize the Hasidim and some of the very Orthodox still adhere to many of those principles, not all of them. I haven't seen anybody sacrifice a bull recently. But in the New Testament, you've got Paul. Now, Jesus, of course, never talked about this because, in my opinion, he was a great advocate of women's rights. But you've got Paul saying that women should sit in the back of the church, keep their heads covered and their mouths shut. And so not only does the Bush administration want to take its war on human rights against all of us collectively, which includes women and men, but now they're also specifically singling out women. Here we have two examples of this. The first, this in an article from the Associated Press by David Crary, contraceptives omitted from rape guidelines. This is incredible. The Justice Department has issued new guidelines for counseling rape victims, for treating rape victims. These are the guidelines that they provide to hospitals. If a woman staggers into a hospital and says, "I was just raped," this is the book of what you're supposed to do. And they have now deleted all mention. In other words, you're not supposed to tell women any longer that if they take a heavy dose of contraceptives right now, or if they take the morning after pill, which is basically, you know, a double dose, I believe. You know, I don't know the science on this stuff, so this is not medical advice. But it's basically just a heavy load, as I recall, of estrogen and progesterone. Anyhow, if you take one of these pills, you will not become pregnant. Even if the ovum has been fertilized up in the fallopian tube, it won't implant in the uterus. It'll just, you know, pass on through, and you won't get pregnant from your rapist. Well, the federal government doesn't want women to know that any longer. And given the dire states of sex education in our schools these days, you can't. Since this is considered a form of contraception, you can't teach this in many schools in the United States. And now they can't tell women this when they walk in having been raped. Gee, there's a way. If you just take this pill right here, any pharmacy has it. You just take this pill, you won't get pregnant as a result of being raped. Justice Department says, we're not going to include that in our guidelines any longer. The AP notes, many major medical groups support the use of emergency contraception, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists recommends that it be offered to all sexual assault victims who are at risk of pregnancy. But many conservative groups contend the use of emergency contraception can be a form of abortion in cases where fertilization has already occurred. Now, that's really pushing it. I mean, we're talking, if it's within 24 to 48 hours of conception, the egg has not implanted itself yet into the lining of the uterus. I mean, this is incredible. And now in Virginia, Republicans in Virginia have introduced a bill into the legislature. House Bill 1677. That would make it a crime if a woman has a miscarriage and fails to call the police and turn herself in. I kid you not. Miscarriages are quite common. In fact, about one out of every four pregnancies results in miscarriage. And now the Republicans in Virginia want to redefine a miscarriage as a fetal death. And because it's a death, it has to be reported to the police. Now, they're not suggesting that women should be prosecuted for having miscarriages. merely that it be recorded. The reason for this is a backdoor way, again, of outlawing abortion. What they're trying to do is they're trying to define a non-viable fetus or a non-viable blast, a collection of blast cells, something. They're trying to define this as a human being and give it protection under the murder laws, so then, of course, abortion becomes illegal. House Bill 1677 in the House of Representatives, the state of Virginia. Here's the official summary of the bill. Quote, report of fetal death by mother penalty provides that when a fetal death occurs without medical attendance, it shall be the woman's responsibility to report the death to the proper law enforcement agency within 12 hours of the delivery. Violation of this section shall be punishable as a Class 1 misdemeanor. Now, I haven't looked up the laws of the state of Virginia with regard to what a Class 1 misdemeanor is, but in most states, a Class 1 misdemeanor, typically a year in jail. But I don't know. I mean, it might be 30 days in jail. It might be 60 days. It might be 90 days. It might be 5 years. I don't know. What's a Class 1 misdemeanor in Virginia? I should have looked that up before I came on the air with this. But perhaps somebody in our chat room can quickly let me know. By the way, if you want to get to our chat room, tomhartman.com, click on live chat. It'll get you there. That's it. In Virginia, they are trying to pass a law now that if a woman has a miscarriage and fails to turn herself into the police and report it as a fetal death, that she has committed a Class 1 misdemeanor crime in the state of Virginia. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And we segue from that to our electile dysfunction alert for the day. Yes. Electile. Our election.
Welcome, my son. Welcome to machines.
Yes, welcome to the machines. A computer expert, this is from the Associated Press today, a computer expert speaking to a legislative panel said he wouldn't trust a voting system that relies on computers. This from a computer expert. Chuck Herron spoke to a legislative panel trying to sort through the problems that plagued North Carolina in the November elections, calling himself a, quote, certified ethical hacker, end quote. And no, apparently that's not an oxymoron. There are ethical hackers. Herron said he would never trust systems with computers because he breaks into them for a living. He says he only trusts paper ballots. The legislative panel on electronic voting systems wants to give recommendations to the General Assembly when it convenes later this month. Interest in the panel grew after a touchscreen voting machine error caused 4,400 votes to disappear in Carteret County. The missing votes, which couldn't be recovered, threw the close agriculture commissioner's race into doubt. The State Board of Elections ordered a new statewide election, but that's being appealed. Yes, my friends, welcome to the machine. And speaking of machines, there is now a new machine you can hook up to your cable box so that your children cannot accidentally stumble across Fox News. Isn't this nice? This is a great new product. This is quite remarkable. It's called the Fox Blocker. The website is foxblocker.com. No, this is unlike Armstrong Williams. Nobody slipped me any cash to tell you about this. You know, boy, wouldn't that be nice? $250,000? Can you imagine? Actually, it wouldn't be nice. We're going to get into that in just a minute. I'll share that with you. But first, I have to tell you about this. Attention, blue state parents, right? This is George Rush and Joanna Malloy for the Tribune Media Services. Are you worried about what your children are seeing on TV? Have you caught them ogling Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity as they engage in explicit acts of love with the Bush administration policies? Now you can protect your little liberals from hardcore right-wing positions the same way you censor cable porn for just $8.95. The Fox Blocker eliminates the risk of exposure to Fox News Channel. Sam Kimmery and Joshua Montgomery, who are marketing the device, say it employs the technology already used to filter adult content. And every time someone orders one of the gizmos from foxblocker.com, Fox advertisers receive email telling them that another consumer has just said no to Rupert Murdoch's brand of so-called fair and balanced news. We hope, Montgomery tells Variety v. Life magazine, we hope that companies will see people actually paying to block channels that won't offer alternative views and then rethink how they spend their advertising dollars. Is Fox worried about this new product? Not really. And here's my take on that. I have no problem with Fox News. I just think that there needs to be something on the other side. If CNN wants to play it down the middle and say that they are offering straight news, although there's a clear conservative bias these days in CNN. But nonetheless, if they just want to be offering news, and Fox is going to offer conservative news, that is news with a, you know, filtered with a conservative slant, I think that there needs to be I think that there's a room in the marketplace, just as there was room in the marketplace for liberal talk radio, and we are proving it every day with the success of this program and others like it. There is room in the marketplace for liberal television news. I'd like to see us go back to the days where communities had local newspapers and you had a couple of different opposing points of view in every community. And you could decide, you know, which slant you wanted to get on the news. Because, you know, it's pretty hard for there not to be any slant at all, frankly. It is part of the great myth that has then led to media consolidation. The myth that news can be unslanted is what brought us the end of the Fairness Doctrine. And, that whole rant. Anyhow, 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live.
And welcome back. I'm not sure we can say live and let live. Well, literally we can, but it is time to speak up and speak out. Welcome back, my friends. When I said that the finest minds on the entire internet were to be found in our chat room, I was not kidding you. Sue, who is in England, found out that a class one misdemeanor in the state of Virginia is up to 1 year in jail and up to a $2,500 fine in that state. Thank you, Sue. And I believe it was Hildegard. I could be wrong. I'd have to go back and look. Somebody pointed out to me that somebody else in the chat room pointed out to me that the law in Virginia has already been withdrawn. That's how fast things happen. Clearly, the Republican Party got wind that this was not good PR. They will be back. I guarantee you, this will be back. This is because it reflects this whole worldview. I mean, this was the whole thing with. You know, from the Peterson trial, I mean, there, obviously, I mean, you had a viable fetus, even by the standards of Roe v. Wade. You had a baby. But nonetheless, it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. Until they have our rights taken away collectively, that is, all of our civil rights, our rights to speak out, our rights to show up where the president or the vice president may be speaking, and not be confined in a free speech zone, things like that. Those rights are gone already. They're working on habeas corpus. They've taken those away from American citizens. Hamdi, Padilla. Yeah, he wants to pronounce Padilla. People call it Padilla, but it's Padilla. And today, well, yesterday, actually, for immediate release, January 10th, this from the, I get these things from the Republican National Committee. We're the media, right? Former Enron lobbyist and current chairman of the RNC, the Republican National Committee, Ed Gillespie, former $700,000 a year Enron lobbyist, fired by Enron, by the way, before they went down the tubes. Ed Gillespie says, all Americans should welcome today's report on CBS News' unprofessional conduct regarding its story about President Bush's National Guard service. And I thought I had in my stack here the details of that. Apparently I don't. But anyhow, this is the bottom line of it. CBS... You know, this investigation was done by a couple of very reputable people into what happened at CBS. And what they found was they were trying to break a story. They were trying to leapfrog the news cycle. Had nothing to do with politics. And yet you got all these cons out there hysterically screaming about this thing. Just going on and on and on. Well, at the same time, now we have a real crime being committed by our government And that is paying money to Armstrong Williams to engage in propaganda within the United States. This is a violation of the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act, Public Law 80-402, among others. The GAO, in a letter to Henry Waxman back on January 4th of this year, says you request an opinion regarding prepackaged news stories. He says you asked whether this was on the ONDCP, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, whether that was propaganda. They say yes. Congress enacted this appropriation limitation, quote, no part of any appropriation contained in this or any other act shall be used for publicity or propaganda purposes within the United States not heretofore authorized by the Congress. And they go on to say, our research indicates that Congress has imposed the same prohibition using identical language on the use of all appropriations for publicity or propaganda purposes annually ever since 1951. So my take on this, Armstrong Williams did not create a crime, did not commit a crime, in my opinion. He exercised bad judgment, as he is saying. But somebody in our government did. Somebody in our government did commit a crime. And do you really think that Alberto Gonzalez, as Attorney General, is going to prosecute that person? Like they're going to go after Valerie Plame's outer? We'll see. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, it's the return of cable's most talked-about show, Growing Up Gotti. It all starts at 9.
Did my ex-husband send you here? Just drive me crazy.
Followed by the new real-life series, Caesars, 24/7. An all-access, behind-the-scenes pass to Sin City's hottest casino, Caesars Palace.
Sometimes people hook up at the table.
Growing Up Gotti premieres at 9, 8 Central, followed by the new real-life series, Caesars, 24/7. Tonight, only on A&E.
I just won $1 million! Yes!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As a newspaper strike in Ohio nears the two-month mark, 24 workers represented by the Teamsters have reached an agreement. However, more than 170 represented by the Newspaper Guild are still on the picket lines. Under the new agreement, mailroom employees at the Vindicator will begin paying for part of their health care coverage, and the contract also calls for a wage freeze and signing bonuses. The workers represented by the Newspaper Guild are unaffected, and there are currently no plans to resume negotiations. The strikers have been publishing their own paper, the Youngstown Valley Voice, which has reached a weekly circulation of 54,000 copies. The Vindicator has a daily circulation of 65,000.
The International Association of Machinists is advocating its own AFL-CIO reform plan that includes a $200 million investment in a labor-owned cable news network, transparency in the AFL-CIO's budget, and a concentration of political efforts in union-dense states. IAM Communications Director Rick Sloan says that the labor movement is still vibrant.
The American labor movement may be a lot of things, but it's not politically impotent, it's not financially bankrupt, nor is it lacking in allies.
On Monday, the AFL-CIO's executive committee considered reform plans from several unions, including the SEIU, Teamsters, Communications Workers, and the Machinists. Sloan says the SEIU proposal goes too far in centralization of power.
We are not weak. We can grow this labor movement of ours, but we have to do it in a way that respects our democratic traditions and respects the autonomy of international and local unions.
A new election has been ordered at Toledo Hospital after the National Labor Relations Board upheld a judge's ruling that the hospital violated labor laws during a 2001 organizing drive. The United Auto Workers had attempted a drive at the hospital to represent nearly 3,300 nurses and other hospital staff. The board says that the hospital created an impression amongst 1,300 janitorial and cafeteria staff members that wage increases would be in jeopardy if the union won the election. The board ruled that those employees should be allowed a revote. The hospital also must post notices saying it violated labor laws during the 2001 election.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economics of Has-Beens is a paper on productivity changes between older and younger workers caused by technology advances. It's written by Glenn McDonald of Washington University. And for the first time, it models and explains how older workers' skills are depreciated by new technology embraced by younger workers. Those younger, more technology-savvy workers tend to drive down the price of labor set by older workers, and one result is downward pressure on older workers' incomes. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
There's a war and a plague, smoke and disaster, lions in the Colosseum, screams of laughter, motherless children, a witness and a Bible, nothing but rain ahead, no chance for our survival, just before the flood comes, just before the
And welcome back. That's a little dystopian song, isn't it? Ira was just over here. We're looking out the window. There's the mouse tracks. Where's the mouse? Thomas Jefferson, the folks in the chat room wanted to know. He's still here. Clear, yeah, definitely fresh tracks from overnight. Going right up, you know, from right up here next to the building, right up the side of the hill. These little mouse tracks. Sure enough. And Narlodius in our chat room says, what's the gender of the mouse, right? Sex the mouse, Tom. He's not going to let me get close enough to look. So maybe it's a she. Who knows? Deer mouse or field mouse? I don't know. If deer mice have the big ears, then he's a deer mouse because he's got great big ears that stick straight up. Whereas I've seen mice that have like smaller ears that are kind of flat down. They look more like moles. And we used to have a vole, actually. Last year, there was a vole living on the other side of the building. And he had, you know, he would come out. At first, I thought it was a mole until I saw that it had a long tail. And we discovered a vole. So, anyhow, this is what you get. You live out in the woods, more or less. Or in a little tiny town that butts up against the woods. And you get wildlife. I won't tell you about the day the skunk attacked our house. Boy, that was wild. Anyhow, we'll get back to Armstrong Williams a little later. If we need to. I mean, I'm not sure that. But I think you know the point was made. But what I want to do right now is our weekly tools for activism class using neurolinguistic programming and other tools, and just wanted to share with you briefly. Techniques for embedding ideas or information into people's unconscious. How do you plant something in somebody's unconscious mind? This is called, in NLP, this is referred to as embedded language. And there's a couple of different ways to do it, and I'm going to share with you how to do it and also how it's used in the political arena. First of all, the conscious mind has a filter. The conscious mind knows context. The unconscious mind does not have a filter, and it does not understand context. And that's the key to understanding how this works. So if I say, you, like me, probably agree that apples taste good, your conscious mind knows that I'm saying, you and I probably agree that apples taste good. But your unconscious mind is hearing, you, like me. You like me. Or it could be, I, like you, believe that apples taste good. The unconscious mind hears, I like you. The conscious mind hears, we agree on something. Two different messages. The second part of this, because the conscious mind has this filter and the unconscious mind doesn't have a filter, the context filter, is the use of the word you. And I just gave you an example of it, but it could get much more powerful. And I will do this when I give speeches, for example. I don't much do it on the radio because it requires quite a bit of effort, but to be thinking about it, you know, for me anyway. I don't routinely just kind of plug this stuff in, but occasionally folks spot it. And everybody does it. Everybody has this ability. Most people do it sloppily. which is brings us to the issue of conscious and unconscious competence, but we'll get back to that. Anyhow, what I'll say, well, here's a way to do it. You know, I was talking the other day with a good friend of mine, and he was talking about how he wanted to accomplish his goals in life. And I said to him, you know, you really and truly can do anything in this life if you just decide you are going to do it and you begin. And every day you remind yourself to hold the vision of your goal in front of you. You really can do that. That's what I said to him. Okay. Now, your conscious mind gets that there was a context of I delivered this message to somebody else. But your unconscious mind heard the message because when the word you is used, the unconscious mind goes, oh, me? So at the unconscious level, you got the message, you really and truly can do anything in this life if you just decide you're going to do it and begin, and every day you remind yourself to hold the vision of the goal in front of you. The conscious mind got something else. Now, the way that people do this very incompetently and very sloppily, and I hear this all the time, you know, just sitting around, somebody either in conversation, people do this, or you hear other people in conversation, and they will say, they'll be talking about a conversation they had with somebody else, and then they'll say, and then I said to him, and usually they're relating how they told somebody off, you know, and then I said to him, F you, and then they go into some kind of rant, you know, you shouldn't, or whatever, like that, and I'm not going to do it to you right now, right, because you don't want your unconscious mind assaulted. But they will be telling somebody else how they told a third person that that person was a schmuck, or that person was stupid, or that person was sloppy, or that person needed a haircut, or that person, you know, whatever. But they say, and I said you, right? And then they go from there. And so everybody hearing them, their unconscious mind is getting this very negative message. And it wears people down over time. So be on notice about when you communicate and when you're telling stories about conversations you had with other people, particularly conversations where you were correcting people or making negative comments. Be very careful to frame them entirely in the third person rather than the second person. The second person being, of course, the word you, the third person being he, she, they, them. So instead of saying, I said to him, you should get a haircut, that being a kind of mild thing, and now, you know, a third of my audience tomorrow is going to hit the barber, right? But I'm saying that because I know I need a haircut. Anyway, instead of saying, I said to him, you should get a haircut, the more appropriate way to say it is, and I said to him, and I told him that he should get a haircut. And then there is no unconscious embedded language. See, in that case, there's no message embedded within the context of the message. There's no secondary message. The point of, by the way, competence, the arc of competence. Here's the arc of competence. People, this is how everybody starts out unconsciously incompetent. That is, they don't know about this stuff. They don't know how communication works. And most people are not particularly good at it. We just kind of stumble around and do the best we can, right? Then you discover some of these rules of communication or some of these tools of communication. And you start noticing when you're violating them, and you become consciously incompetent. In other words, you become aware of the times that you're not doing it right. And so then you make an effort to do it right. And you become consciously competent. It's the third stage. So you go from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence to conscious competence. In other words, you're doing it intentionally, and you're doing it well. And if you do that for a while, then you begin to become unconsciously competent, which is to say that it just becomes automatic. And you just, you know, it just works. It becomes a new skill set. And this is the transition that people go through with everything from learning to ride a bicycle. Okay, the first time before you got on the bike, you were unconsciously incompetent. You didn't know how to ride a bike. You didn't know anything about it. You get on the bike and you fall off it. You discover that you're consciously incompetent. Somebody teaches you how to ride a bike. In my case, it was my dad when I was like, four, five, six, whatever. And, he's holding the seat as I'm going along, and I'm becoming consciously competent. And then after a few efforts of being consciously, I became unconsciously incompetent. That is, I could ride a bike and carry on a conversation or think about something else, and I'm not even noticing that I'm riding the bike. Same thing with driving, for example. Driving is another example. Well, it's the same thing with communication. Another aspect of embedded language is to embed pictures. And, I believe I told this story on the air before, but I think it might have been a year or two ago. And it's a story that, as I'm pretty sure I said last time, I'm not sure if I'm proud of this or not. It may have been in one of these NLP classes. Frankly, I don't, you do this stuff for a couple of years, and I do this stuff for a couple of years. Anything that we do for a couple of years, it kind of becomes a blur. But I was a frequent flyer for years. I used to do a lot of training and teach workshops and whatnot, give speeches, and traveled around the country a lot. And so I was at the very top of the Delta frequent flyer program, and I was a flying colonel, and I'm a million mile or 7 million miles of Delta. And I was in one of their crown rooms. As a flying colonel, you get free membership in their crown. This is a program they used to have. I don't know if they still have it or not. I haven't done so much frequent flying lately. And it was the Thanksgiving weekend, which is the worst travel, the most intense, heavy, dense travel holiday. And I was trying to get back home. This is when we were living in Atlanta. And I was flying through, as I recall, Salt Lake City. It might have been Cincinnati. And I was in the crown room, and I walked into the crown room, and it was just wall-to-wall people. It was absolutely packed. And I walked over, and there was a couple of sofas and a couple of chairs around a coffee table. And everything was occupied except this one chair. And it kind of surprised me that there was a chair there. And so I sat down in the chair, and opposite me was this big guy, in Texas drag. I mean, this guy was like, he had the hat, the big belt buckle, the jeans, the boots, the whole bit. And a giant cigar. Now, this was back at least a decade ago. This was back when it was okay to smoke in airports and in the crown room. But they had a smoking section. And you couldn't smoke cigars or pipes. And this guy is smoking this cigar, and people around him are coughing and looking uncomfortable. And finally, and I'm sitting there, and I've been on airplanes for hours, and I've had probably a few more glasses of wine than I should have. And this woman next to him makes this comment. She says, she's coughing. She says, she tells him that she has asthma and asks him if he would please not smoke. And he says, he takes a puff and blows it in her direction. Like he's a tough guy, right? So she goes over and gets the woman who's running the crown room, who's got like a line of about 15 people at her computer because there's snowstorms and the whole country's been shut down and it's a disaster. And so after a few minutes, this woman who runs the crown room comes over and she says to this guy, and she's got a pack of cigarettes in her hand. And she says to this guy, sir, I'm really sorry, but here in the crown room, we don't allow smoking of cigars. Here is a pack of cigarettes. You're welcome to have it. And the smoking section is over there. And so if you go over to the smoking section and smoke a cigarette, that would be fine. But you can't sit here in the non-smoking section and smoke a cigar. And he takes takes this kind of long, thoughtful puff on his cigar, and he stares at her for a long minute or so. She's starting to feel, kind of uncomfortable. And he finally blows the smoke out, and he looks at her and he says, "Call a cop, lady." And so she goes back. She stands there for a minute, uncertain, and obviously she decides this is not a fight worth having. And so she goes back to her station and takes back to taking care of customers. And so I'm sitting there thinking, I'm going to get this guy. So I leaned across the table and I said in the most friendly voice I could come up with, I'll bet there's something that that I don't know. This is what I said to him. And I'm not trying to implant or embed a message to you. I'm just telling you a story here. But, and I'll keep the good stuff good and avoid the bad stuff. So anyhow, he looks at me for a second. He says, "Oh yeah." I said, "Yeah, you know, something that you know, all my life I've wondered about this, and I'll bet that you know the answer to this question, and it's probably a question." I told him. I said, "It's probably a question that." Well, I'm not going to do it in the second person, having just told you this whole thing. So I told him that it was probably, I'll do it in the third person. I told him it was probably a question that everybody he knew had in their mind, and that everybody he would meet, you know, anybody just meeting him would probably have this question. And he was like, you know, he was wary, but he was willing to have a conversation with me. So he says, well, what's the question? And I said, well, you know, we all learned in high school. I mean, everybody. And I told him that, you know, I said, as you walk down the street, you know, people that you meet learned this in high school. Okay, there's the limit of the embedding that I'm going to do. And I said that Sigmund Freud said that the larger the cigar, the smaller the penis. And I'm just wondering, is that true? And there was this long silence. And he's looking at his cigar, and I'm thinking, I shouldn't have done this, because this guy's going to put the cigar out in my face. And, you know, but I'd had a couple of glasses, as I said. I was rather uninhibited at the moment. And finally, he just stands up and walks out of the crown room. And the whole room bursts into applause. And it was just one of those, like, marvelous moments, you know. But the embed in that was the part where... It was the future pacing and the previous pacing where I was telling him that in the future, everybody who sees him will have that question. And in the past, probably everybody he knows would have the question. So there's a lot of ways of embedding this. Another one is double negatives, and this is used in politics. And I'll give you the political spin on all this right after the break. We'll wrap this thing up with how this is used in politics. I find this stuff fascinating, and I'm getting so much email on these NLP classes. You know, I hope you do, too. Anyway, we'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the home of reality-based radio.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine.
You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
An amateur scientist chases snowflakes and creates captivating photographs. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Pat Belling likes winter, but it's not skiing or ice fishing that makes her heart beat faster. Belling works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, and for the past 23 years, she's spent her winter free time photographing snowflakes. Most snowflake photographers take their pictures outside to capture the flakes before they melt, but Belling found she could spread an acrylic sealant on a microscope slide and capture the imprint of any flake that landed on it. Armed with a cold cookie sheet of these resin-coated slides, Belling waits for snow.
And it has to be a perfect snow. There are years I can't get any because it's too wet here, it's too heavy, it's too windy. It's got to be that perfect snow when you go out and you put your arms out and you see the individual flakes. And then it has to land perfectly, because if it lands on an angle, it crumbles. Or if something else hits it, another snowflake, it's not going to be a perfect catch. So the first time I got it, I got one of these really complex ones. It was like finding a diamond.
Belling then brings the slides indoors, waits hours for the tiny imprints to dry, and counts her catch using a microscope attached to a camera. She says capturing even a piece of a snowflake is exciting, and she gladly teaches her technique to others.
When you have something so natural, so beautiful, you need to share it. It's sort of like that AdWords, this costs this much, but this is priceless. I've had people come back at shows the next year and say to me, "You know, I don't look at snow in the same way since I've met you." It's really rewarding. And kids will say, "You mean that's what it looks like when I eat it?"
Belling's photographs are currently on display at the Mosquito Hill Nature Center in New London, Wisconsin. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I met her in the club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like cherry cola. C-O-L-A cola. She walked up to
and
me.
And welcome back. In response to the chat room, yes, it was a very large cigar this guy had. A very large cigar. Here's the embed. Here's if you really want to mangle somebody's unconscious mind. The other thing that the unconscious mind can't do because it can't filter context is it can't interpret a double negative. In fact, the unconscious mind can't even interpret a single negative. In other words, if I say "Don't think about elephants," the title of George Lakoff's book about this topic. You have to think about an elephant to know what it is to not think about, right? So it's not possible to say to somebody, "Don't think about elephants." You know, it's like an old Zen koan, right? But the double negative or the triple negative will completely blow away the unconscious mind. And you can use this if you say you're debating with somebody and you want to just completely, you know, disorient them for a minute. Say, for example, one other thing, and that is by using the word K-N-O-W, like "I know this, you know this," the unconscious mind more often than not will hear that as N-O, which is interesting. So you could say, for example, to a conservative, "I know you don't think George Bush is somebody who doesn't give a damn about the fact that working people's incomes are falling year after year." And there's a series of negatives in there. "I know..." Right. "You don't think George is somebody who doesn't give," right? So there's three negatives in there. So first of all, for a moment, it's like, what? But the message gets through. Now, politically, You want to embed positive language for your candidate, negative for theirs. For example, it would be wrong to say, if you were in favor of Ralph Nader, to say Ralph Nader would never condone torture, because what does that do? The word never can't get processed by the unconscious mind. So you get Ralph Nader condoned torture would be the message. So instead, the correct way to say that would be to say Ralph Nader supports human rights. Or most conservative political commentators would never suggest that George W. Bush inserts waterboarding detainees when they're wrapped to a board and can't move and then being held underwater thinking they'll drown. Right? Although he does, actually. But the point is, I mean, you could say that in a debate, and it raises the, it evokes the picture, even though there's a negative in there. So this is embedding language. That's our tool for the day, tool for activism. Start noticing, particularly in political campaigns, if you can find some of the old political websites, particularly in the Republican campaigns, go back and look at all the embedded language. There was an enormous amount of embedded language in the Bush campaigns, in the Bush ads. And a fair amount of it actually in the Swift Boat ads. So, remarkable stuff. Interesting stuff. It's your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As a newspaper strike in Ohio nears the two-month mark, 24 workers represented by the Teamsters have reached an agreement. However, more than 170 represented by the Newspaper Guild are still on the picket lines. Under the new agreement, mailroom employees at the Vindicator will begin paying for part of their health care coverage, and the contract also calls for a wage freeze and signing bonuses. The workers represented by the Newspaper Guild are unaffected, and there are currently no plans to resume negotiations. The strikers have been publishing their own paper, the Youngstown Valley Voice, which has reached a weekly circulation of 54,000 copies. The Vindicator has a daily circulation of 65,000.
The International Association of Machinists is advocating its own AFL-CIO reform plan that includes a $200 million investment in a labor-owned cable news network, transparency in the AFL-CIO's budget, and a concentration of political efforts in union-dense states. IAM Communications Director Rick Sloan says that the labor movement is still vibrant.
The American labor movement may be a lot of things, but it's not politically impotent, it's not financially bankrupt, nor is it lacking in allies.
On Monday, the AFL-CIO's executive committee considered reform plans from several unions, including the SEIU, Teamsters, Communications Workers, and the Machinists. Sloan says the SEIU proposal goes too far in centralization of power.
We are not weak. We can grow this labor movement of ours, but we have to do it in a way that respects our democratic traditions and respects the autonomy of international and local unions.
A new election has been ordered at Toledo Hospital after the National Labor Relations Board upheld a judge's ruling that the hospital violated labor laws during a 2001 organizing drive. The United Auto Workers had attempted a drive at the hospital to represent nearly 3,300 nurses and other hospital staff. The board says that the hospital created an impression amongst 1,300 janitorial and cafeteria staff members that wage increases would be in jeopardy if the union won the election. The board ruled that those employees should be allowed a revote. The hospital also must post notices saying it violated labor laws during the 2001 election.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The economics of has-beens is a paper on productivity changes between older and younger workers caused by technology advances. It's written by Glenn McDonald of Washington University. And for the first time, it models and explains how older workers' skills are depreciated by new technology embraced by younger workers. Those younger, more technology-savvy workers tend to drive down the price of labor set by older workers, and one result is downward pressure on older workers' incomes. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
We know that global trade is totally out of whack for our country. We were promised that if we accepted the corporate ideology of global free trade, millions of new good-paying middle-class jobs would be created here to make all of those products that they said the USA would soon be exporting to places like China, thanks to the glorious magic of globalization. But it turned out to be globaloney. Rather than creating manufacturing jobs for workers here, the Walmarts and Nikes simply abandoned America, fleeing to places like China to make all those products. The corporate globalizers turned America from being a proud, strong manufacturing nation into a nation dependent on imports. Our global trade balance is an embarrassment. We now buy $500 billion a year more in goods from abroad than we sell in the world market. China alone pockets $18 billion a year from us, selling that much more to us than they buy from America. What most Americans don't know, however, is what China and other nations do with this excess cash that they're amassing from our trade imbalance. They've been using much of it to buy the U.S. government's bonds, putting our country deeply, perhaps dangerously, in debt to them. Indeed, the central banks of just four Asian nations, Japan, China, Taiwan, and South Korea, now hold roughly 40% of Washington's public debt. In effect, they've quietly become our world banker, giving them inordinate power over America's purse strings. On everything from the value of the American dollar to the spending policies of Congress, these four foreign banks are in a position to yank our strings, and they are. They're now demanding, for example, that Washington protect the value of their investments in U.S. bonds by cutting back on federal spending, cuts that would come from the education budget, Social Security benefits, and other spending that we Americans count on. This is Jim Hightower saying, when did we vote for this?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
The ACLU has a new campaign. Welcome back, by the way. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you, where the truth is non-negotiable. Is that a double negative? No, it's not. That's just straight up. The ACLU, boy, here's again. It's interesting. See, you can just following on from the tail end of our conversation the previous hour about NLP. If you put a strong enough active verb before something, you can reverse it at the level of the unconscious, but it's hard to do. It's a challenge. But you could say Ralph Nader opposes torture. And if you strongly opposes torture, and that then you know it wouldn't so much implant the idea of Ralph Nader in torture. The ACLU has a campaign: refuse, which is a good strong verb, refuse to surrender your freedom. This is the new campaign. Anthony D. Romero, the executive director of the ACLU, just rolled this thing out. 73,000 people now have taken the refuse to surrender pledge to help the ACLU. And this is a good cause. ACLU.org is their website. And just wanted to let you know, these guys are getting active about doing something, among other groups. There's a number of other excellent groups. HumanRightsFirst.org is another great group. In fact, they provided me with some of the information that went into the article that I wrote on that's on Common Dreams. It was at the top of the page. Probably still is. They usually update around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, yesterday anyway. So welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. We have Michael in Brisbane, Australia, sent me an email. And this just to kind of wrap this stuff up. He says, hi, Tom, I don't get to hear you live because you're on at 3 a.m. down under. He says, I thought I'd offer some. So I'm assuming that he's listening to the archive programs at White Rose Society. Thanks to Ben Birch for that. We're very grateful to have the program in its entirety, every single day, archived there. And I know that we have listeners in over 97 countries, last I checked, who regularly download our program. And I know we have a number of listeners in Australia. In fact, one of them came over here and visited with us just a few months ago. And in any case, Mike says, I don't get to hear you live because you're on at 3 a.m. down under. Thought I'd offer some suggested terms to help you in making some things a little easier to communicate. Number one, instead of instant runoff voting, use the term preferential voting. That's the term we use here being in Australia. And it makes it clear what IRV is all about. Good point. By the way, I was going to share with you, lest I forget, here's an example of George Bush. See, people say, how can it be that 70% of the people who voted for George Bush believe that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11? All right, here's George W. Bush on the topic.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Yeah. Now, we have no evidence, right? But again, the unconscious mind doesn't process the no. So, he came out and he said this in a news conference. It was widely reported.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Yeah. We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September 11th. And what do people hear? Saddam Hussein was involved with September 11th. That's what they hear. And there you go. So any George Bush using a nice little linguistic trick there. Back to Mike's email from Brisbane, Australia. Number two, he says, the Armstrong-Williams scandal is simply called cash for comments. This term was invented by the Australian media when two of our top radio hosts were caught accepting payments for favorable coverage. That's a nice one, cash for comments. And I want to say again, with regard to Armstrong-Williams, number one, I'm fascinated by the fact that he told David Korn that he wasn't the only one who was taking money from the Bush administration for propaganda. And that, number one, what he did was unethical, perhaps, arguably unethical. The reason I put the perhaps in there is because, I may well be wrong on this, but my understanding is that Armstrong Williams does not represent himself as a journalist or reporter. He represents himself as a pundit, as someone who is offering opinion, as do I. On this program, I'm not telling you, here's the news. If you want the news, listen to Democracy Now! Amy Goodman reports the news. She doesn't offer her opinions. She reports the news. I offer you my opinion. I give you my take on the news. So I'll share news with you, but I'll also give you my take on it. And while I will say I have never been paid to spin a news story by anybody. There is, in journalism, very clear ethical standards that you don't report the news in ways that benefit sponsors. You don't report the news in ways that benefit, you know, you don't take payola, all that kind of thing. In the world of punditry, to the best of my knowledge, these standards have never been established. I mean, there is not a Columbia School of Punditry like there is the Columbia School of Journalism. There's not, you know, a national publication of punditry. I suppose the closest that we have is the industry publication Talkers Magazine, a great publication published by Michael Harrison out of Massachusetts. And it's the trade publication for the talk radio industry. It's something that I read and Sean Hannity reads, right? It talks about who's doing what inside the industry. But to the best of my knowledge, Talkers Magazine has never, and there, to the best of my knowledge, there is no, like, trade association for talk radio folks, has never come out with a set of ethical guidelines for talk radio or for punditry. And so I can't say with any certainty or conviction that, in my opinion, Armstrong Williams did something that was a clear violation of the standards of the industry in which he operated. Now, apparently, one of the newspaper chains that syndicates him thought so. They've dropped his column. And there are a lot of people very upset with him, and I think justifiably so. And I'm not saying this to defend him. My point is that what's going on here is the three-card Monty deal. What's going on here is everybody in the media, particularly the Fox variety of the media, is focusing on whether or not Armstrong Williams did something wrong by taking the money. And nobody is focusing on the fact that there is a law on the books that says that if a government official passes out money to somebody like Armstrong Williams to do what Armstrong Williams did, that is domestic propaganda, that is a crime. In other words, the Bush administration has committed a crime, and they have done it several times, and the GAO has pointed this out several times. But who's going to prosecute them? John Ashcroft? Alberto Gonzalez? The Justice Department? Somehow I doubt it. Who's going to investigate them? Do you think Bill Frist is going to allow the Senate to investigate them? Do you think Denny Hastert is going to allow the House to investigate them? This is the problem that you have with one-party rule, whether it's Democrats or Republicans. This is the problem that you have with one-party rule. Our system works best when there is an adversarial relationship built into it. So, anyhow, the point is, with regard to Armstrong Williams, is that to the best of my knowledge, nobody is really talking about except me. And I don't know why this is. Maybe everybody else is taking cash on the side and I'm not. I don't know. But somebody in this government has committed a crime. See, it's like Voice of America. Voice of America can broadcast in Europe. During the Cold War, Voice of America was constantly broadcasting, here's the news, and the Russians are terrible, you know, bloody blah, and here's what the Soviets are up to. And they were broadcasting an American slant. It was propaganda, an American slant on the news into the Soviet Union and the Soviet-held states in an attempt to influence politics in those nations. And ultimately, they succeeded, by the way. Or you could say, ultimately, what was called communism failed. Frankly, I would say it was probably much more of the latter and less of the former. But nonetheless, when Voice of America was organized, and the agency that ran it was put together, they were explicitly required by law not to broadcast within the United States. And this was because people were aware of the fact that back in the 1917, 1918, that Wilson, President Wilson, had used internal propaganda to promote our involvement in World War I. And a lot of people were very upset about this, particularly Republicans. And they didn't want to see it happen again. And so they passed these laws that said that you can't propagandize the American people. Can't do it. Sorry. And so that's where the crime is. It's just like this, you know, outing of Valerie Plame. I mean, going after Valerie Plame. There's a felony, not just a felony. I mean, a treason, a felony for which you can be lined up and shot, was committed by somebody in the White House. Now, what does George Bush have to say about that?
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, yeah. And sure enough, it has been 572 days since Valerie Plame was out. So anyhow, that was number two in Michael Ray's email to me. He said, instead of calling the Armstrong-Williams scam, we should simply call it cash for comments. I think that's kind of cool. That's what they call it in Australia. And number three, he says, when discussing the issue of Social Security overhead costs with right-wingers, there's an easy way to hit them between the eyes when discussing the difference between government costs and Social Security versus Wall Street's fees. Ask them if they'd rather pay their fees at wholesale or retail rates. This is brilliant. Mike, you're doing good, I got to say. This is brilliant. He says, most right-wingers think they're investment gurus and can't stand that type of catchphrase logic. By the way, the same applies when discussing all sorts of issues, mercenaries versus soldiers, health care costs. Yeah, the second largest army in Iraq right now, the second largest army, larger than the British army, the second largest army in Iraq right now is private mercenaries. Paid for with your and my tax dollars, by the way, in virtually all of it, even if it's passed through. We give the money to Halliburton. Halliburton hires the mercenaries. They're called private security forces. And these guys are making $100,000, $150,000 a year. We're buying military at retail when we could be buying it at wholesale. That is, we could have a draft, or we could simply get more soldiers over there. If that was our goal. I think we should get all of our soldiers out of there, but that's a whole other thing. And the same thing was with Medicare. You know, do you want to buy at retail or at wholesale? Well, obviously, the Republicans built right into the Medicare bill, wrote right into the bill, that we have to buy at retail, not wholesale. Same thing with Social Security. Do you want your Social Security at wholesale, that is the government, 1% overhead, or do you want it retail going through Wall Street, 2, 3, 4, 5% overhead? You get to choose. Great one there. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Just got home from Illinois. Locked the front door, oh boy. Got to sit down, take a rest on the porch.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com, our website. However you spell it, it'll get you there. Although it is T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's. But however you spell it, within reason. We'll get you there. You can drop into our live chat room. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roy in Los Angeles makes the point. He says, the reason that the Republicans resisted the paper trail for voting machines. Now, this is one I haven't heard before. They should be out there promoting this. Wise use of our national forests. Why should we waste trees with paper ballots? You know, I've been looking for can anybody tell me why the Republicans have been so opposed to Rush Holt's bill in the House and Hillary Clinton's bill in the Senate that would require voting machines to produce a paper ballot that could be used to verify an election, to audit an election in the case of the need for a recount. And nobody has been able to explain to me why the Republicans are opposed to this until Roy in Los Angeles came along and he said, here it is. Wise use of our national forests. That's why the Republicans have resisted paper trail for voting machines. They want to protect our trees. And, you know, I think that's pretty noble. I think that's pretty cool. That's pretty noble. So, sounds good. It's 25 minutes after the hour, 26 minutes past the hour. Let's go to Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service for our report for the day from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen.
Hi. Well, before we talk about Mr. Chertoff heading the Homeland Security Department, and it should be known that Hillary Clinton voted against him twice, not once, but twice.
Oh, interesting.
Looks like Judiciary Chair Charles Sumner said that his inclination was to support him, saying that he has an understanding of New York's and America's neglected Homeland Security needs.
Oh, geez.
So that's
this
kind
is
of
you know this is the guy in the Masui case or however you say it. I don't have it in front of me now, but I did the first half of the first hour of the program on this guy. This is the guy who says that he has no right to face his accuser, even though the Sixth Amendment says that, because his accuser is in another country. Well, it turns out the other country is Cuba, Guantanamo Bay. Right. But, you know, it's. I mean, this is a guy
who's... His record in terms of what he did when he was head of the criminal division would make human rights people cringe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just the kind of guy George W. wants running our country, running our Homeland Security. I mean, we are
now,
heading for fascism so fast.
That they are raising about $40 million for the inaugural. Well, also, if you look, there's four different kinds of police in Washington. There's the Capitol Police, the Secret Service, there are the Park Police, and, of course, the D.C. Police. And D.C. is expected to pick up $17 million of the inaugural costs. About $5 million of that is taken by a special fund. That leaves $11.9 million that they said, the White House said, hey, take it from your Homeland Security funds to pay for the inaugural.
No.
But you do the math. We're actually trying to do the math right now, Tom. And if you take a look at the math, you will find that essentially what is happening is that they are using funds for this inaugural, and it's probably going to cost, I would say, anywhere between $30 and $80 million in security.
Yeah, and this is money that in the past Congress has always had a special appropriation to help Washington, D.C. pay for, have they not?
That's correct. But I'm just talking about if you add up not just the D.C. money, but the extra grass that it costs on the on the lawn and the president's security and the building of things that are not paid for by the private inaugural committee.
Right. Yeah, well, we're going to have a coronation, and George is going to make sure that we pay for it, right?
And I actually think somebody ought to put a bill that if it's your second term, you don't get an inaugural.
Yeah, there you go. Or
you make a speech, you don't get a big party.
Yeah, there you go.
But then how would you reward your big contributors?
I was just going to say, it ain't going to happen, Ellen. It's a nice idealism, but it ain't going to happen.
Last but not least, you know, Howard Dean formally announced that he is going to run for DNC chair.
Formally announced. Great. Good on him. I hope he makes it. I really hope he makes it. That's the last great hope for the Democratic Democratic Party, in my opinion. They have so badly blown things. Did you read the piece I wrote in CommonDreams.org yesterday?
I did not.
Oh, well, check it out. I think you'll like it.
Okay. I've been trying to, but we're a little inauguration busy here.
There you go. And I think your brother will like it, too. Thanks a lot, Ellen. Talk Radio, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight, it's the return of cable's most talked about show, Growing Up Gotti. It all starts at 9.
Did my ex-husband send you here? Just drive me crazy.
Followed by the new real-life series, Caesars, 24/7. An all-access, behind-the-scenes pass to Sin City's hottest casino, Caesars Palace.
Sometimes people hook up at the table.
Growing Up Gotti premieres at 9. 8 Central, followed by the new real-life series Caesars 24/7. Tonight, only on A&E.
I just won $1 million!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
As a newspaper strike in Ohio nears the two-month mark, 24 workers represented by the Teamsters have reached an agreement. However, more than 170 represented by the Newspaper Guild are still on the picket lines. Under the new agreement, mailroom employees at the Vindicator will begin paying for part of their health care coverage, and the contract also calls for a wage freeze and signing bonuses. The workers represented by the Newspaper Guild are unaffected, and there are currently no plans to resume negotiations. The strikers have been publishing their own paper, the Youngstown Valley Voice, which has reached a weekly circulation of 54,000 copies. The Vindicator has a daily circulation of 65,000.
The International Association of Machinists is advocating its own AFL-CIO reform plan that includes a $200 million investment in a labor-owned cable news network, transparency in the AFL-CIO's budget, and a concentration of political efforts in union-dense states. IAM Communications Director Rick Sloan says that the labor movement is still vibrant.
The American labor movement may be a lot of things, but it's not politically impotent, it's not financially bankrupt, nor is it lacking in allies.
On Monday, the AFL-CIO's executive committee considered reform plans from several unions, including the SEIU, Teamsters, communications workers, and the machinists. Sloan says the SEIU proposal goes too far in centralization of power.
We are not weak. We can grow this labor movement of ours, but we have to do it in a way that respects our democratic traditions and respects the autonomy of international and local unions.
A new election has been ordered at Toledo Hospital after the National Labor Relations Board upheld a judge's ruling that the hospital violated labor laws during a 2001 organizing drive. The United Auto Workers had attempted a drive at the hospital to represent nearly 3,300 nurses and other hospital staff. The board says that the hospital created an impression amongst 1,300 janitorial and cafeteria staff members that wage increases would be in jeopardy if the union won the election. The board ruled that those employees should be allowed a revote. The hospital also must post notices saying it violated labor laws during the 2001 election.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Economics of Has-Beens is a paper on productivity changes between older and younger workers caused by technology advances. It's written by Glenn McDonald of Washington University. And for the first time, it models and explains how older workers' skills are depreciated by new technology embraced by younger workers. Those younger, more technology-savvy workers tend to drive down the price of labor set by older workers, and one result is downward pressure on older workers' incomes. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back.
Too many myths.
Coming between me and you. Are there myths about cholesterol? Are there myths about health?
I'm becoming an old fart here. You start wondering about these things, and I know you might be wondering about them too.
So I just wanted to take a step off politics for a moment and consult with an expert. We have Todd Whitthorn. Am I pronouncing that right, Todd?
You sure are, Tom.
Thank you. Todd Whitthorn has been in the public eye for more than 20 years. He's currently the president and chief operating officer of Cooper Concepts, Inc., a division of the Cooper Aerobics Center in Dallas. Also serves as the host, executive producer of Healthy Living Radio with Dr. Ken Cooper. The website is CooperInst, CooperInst.org. And Todd, two of the leading research groups independently reported recently in the New England Journal of Medicine that there's this thing called C-reactive protein, that if you can lower it, it reduces or that it indicates the amount of inflammation in the body, and that if you can lower this, it's just as important as reducing LDL, the bad cholesterol, in preventing heart attacks and strokes. What is C-reactive protein?
Great question, Tom. It's probably the hottest topic in medicine right now. As you indicated, it's a measure of inflammation. And what is interesting is that we've known for many, many years that this is a protein, by the way. It's made in the liver and other places in the body. But you can measure it just like you measure cholesterol, just, you know, with a simple blood test.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that if you have an increased level of C-reactive protein in the blood, that there's been an increased risk of heart disease, diabetes, and there's really some belief that it could be associated with Alzheimer's and other diseases as well.
Right.
You almost have to go back 30 or 40 years and when we started really learning about cholesterol. There was a period of time, and obviously today it's a lot different, but go back 40 years when we learned that people that had high levels of cholesterol were at greater risk of heart attack. But it took a while to determine scientifically to really prove that if you lowered the cholesterol, you lowered the risk.
Right.
So what those studies that were published last week in the New England Journal indicated, this was the first time that it was clearly, you could tell scientifically that if you lower C-reactive protein, you actually lower the risk of heart disease and diabetes. And
could
so
it,
that is a big step forward.
Now I know that cholesterol is produced in the body. I mean, there's endogenous and exogenous cholesterol. There's the stuff that we eat, the cholesterol that we eat. But there's also, I mean, if you eat absolutely no cholesterol at all, your body produces. In fact, your body
absolutely
needs it.
Absolutely right.
And the body produces cholesterol in part to protect particular parts of the body, and also in response to inflammation. So could it be, or I believe so. Is that correct?
Absolutely
okay.
Right. There's,
so,
cholesterol comes from two sources. What you're basically born with, your genetic profile, that cholesterol that's made in the liver, and then also what you consume. So
right.
When you want to modify that It's hard to modify your parents, but you can modify your diet.
Right. So could it be that all this time they've been looking at the wrong thing? That if there's inflammation in the body, and this leads me back to the studies that I saw maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I saw these in New Scientist. I forget which journal it was published in, but I subscribed to New Scientist and Science News, and so you get these digests of these things. And there was this study that showed that there was a positive correlation between heart disease and gum disease, that people who had heavy infections in their gums of Streptococcus mutans, which is a bacteria that's ubiquitous, it's everywhere, pretty much everybody has it, but people who are feeding that, presumably with a lot of sugar or whatever, that if they had a lot of gum disease, that they had a higher risk of heart disease. And they were guessing that somehow the inflammation associated with the gum disease, it wasn't that these nasty bugs, the Streptococcus mutans, were get down in the heart, but that the inflammation was causing the entire body to react in an inflammatory way, because it was a chronic inflammation, and that was causing the body to overproduce cholesterol and other byproducts of the body's reactions to inflammation, and that was somehow leading to the heart disease. And might that have been the early stuff that was pointing to C-reactive protein? I mean, could it be, in other words, that what we really should have been looking at all along is not cholesterol, but instead of C-reactive protein? That this is what's causing
the cholesterol? One of the things that we've known for a long, long time is that heart disease is a multifactorial disease. It's not just one thing. I think a lot of your listeners and a lot of Americans certainly feel that if their cholesterol is less than 200, that they're heart healthy, and nothing could be further from the truth. The majority of people that die from heart attack, close to 50% of the people that die from heart attack, have average or below average cholesterol. So there are a lot of factors that lead into this, and clearly you're absolutely right. There's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. But this study, the two studies that were published last week indicating that this, and you really touched on it, you hit it exactly right. It's chronic inflammation as opposed to acute inflammation.
Right.
You know, our body was designed very, very beautifully, and that when we step on a nail or get stung by a bee or bit by a dog, we have this inflammatory reaction. This acute inflammation will happen where that wound will swell, it becomes red, but obviously then the body takes over and it heals that wound. Well, while it's inflamed, your C-reactive protein levels will be elevated. When that wound is healed, when that bout of acute inflammation disappears, then the CRP level comes down.
So this
However,
be...
now what we realize is that there's this base level of inflammation going on constantly in the body. You may not have symptoms, you may not feel it, but just like your gums could be inflamed, also the coronary vessels could be inflamed. So it's not just this old school thought that our vessels eventually just clog up and shut down.
Right.
It's now this concept that the lining of our coronary vessels are inflamed, and that this inflammation, this measure that we can now very easily measure with a simple blood test of the CRP, that's an indication, that's a red flag.
Right.
And again, the real important point that came out was, according to the researchers and authors of the study, was that they feel that CRP is at least as important as LDL, or that lousy cholesterol,
right,
in terms of predicting future events.
Now, this would seem...
the study showed if you lower it, you're going to put yourself in a better position.
Right. Now, this would seem to imply, Todd Whitthorn, that somebody with chronic infection, hepatitis C comes to mind. It's the chronic infection that's all in the newspapers right now.
Sure.
But there are many others. The gum disease, another one. That people with chronic infections would just naturally have a higher risk because they'd have more C-reactive protein. So There must be some way to reduce this. First of all, are you familiar with trimethylglycine, TMG, and does that play any role in this, or is that completely off the – is that some completely different thing?
To this point, there's no link, nothing that I have seen in any of the literature at all.
Okay.
And again, you've got to realize that this is really the cutting edge. This whole area really kicked in about March of 2002, when Paul Richter back at Harvard did most of the leading research on this. He's been the cutting-edge guy on C-reactive protein as it relates to heart disease.
Right.
CRP has actually been in the medical community. We've known about this for a long time, and since the 30s, literally, because of rheumatoid arthritis. We know that people that have rheumatoid arthritis have elevated levels of CRP. But now it's being linked to these other conditions and these other diseases, and it's just last week that we were really shown that, well, if we bring it down, we really do reduce risk.
So that then begs the question, how does a person reduce their levels of C-reactive protein? Clearly, first of all, you'd want to do whatever you can to eliminate any sort of chronic infection, right?
Exactly, and that's why you're going to need a series of measurements. In fact, one elevated level of CRP is nothing to be overly alarmed about. It's a consistent elevation that's the problem. So if you have a cold, even if you get into a fight with your spouse, your CRP levels will go up and then they'll come back down. So there's a constant ebb and flow. But if you have an elevated, constant baseline CRP, that's where there's a red flag and something to be concerned about. If you want to lower it, it actually can be lowered in much the same manner that we want to, you know, we concentrate about cholesterol. Weight loss will lower C-reactive protein. We know that the statin drugs that many Americans are on, like Lipitor and Zocor and Pravacol, those anti-cholesterol drugs, that lowers CRP. Aspirin will lower CRP. High levels of fruits and vegetables in terms of in your diet will help lower C-reactive protein. We've been doing some research for the past 4 years on whether or not a multivitamin combination can lower C-reactive protein, and we had some data published last year in the American Journal of Medicine showing that indeed we can lower it through a particular formulation by 32%.
What was significant in that formulation that would be different than a regular over-the-counter or even a good high-quality health food store multivitamin?
The product is called Cooper Complete, and it's a combination of 24 ingredients. And it's a great question that you ask is specifically what was responsible for the reduction in C-reactive protein. There have been some studies indicating that the right combination of antioxidants can be very helpful. We certainly know from our research that the right combination, vitamins don't work independently, they work synergistically. So sometimes it's a little tough to identify a particular nutrient.
Right.
But we do know right combinations can impact risk factors like homocysteine,
mm-hmm.
The oxidation of LDL cholesterol, and C-reactive protein. We feel that potentially B6 plays a significant role in it. But I think the answer to your question is things in combination. So that's part of our challenge, our ongoing research. We've had several studies published. We had a very large clinical trial initially. We've got another one ongoing where we're now looking also at the inclusion of omega-3 fatty acids because we know the omega-3s are anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
So I can't give you a specific answer to that, but we do know that formulation of Cooper Complete did have a very specific impact on the C-reactive protein.
Right, and the omega-3 fatty acids being, for people who don't recognize that, being basically fish oils or particular vegetable oil combinations that provide a spectrum of
omega-3s primarily are going to come from fish and from fish oil because the omega-3s, what you're really looking for are the components of that omega-3 which come from what the fish eat, and that's primarily the algae. It's
yeah.
the EPA and the DHA that is so vitally important. That's really truly the only source of the long chain omega-3s are marine based. When you look at the shorter chain omega-3s, you can get that through things like walnut and flaxseed oil.
Right.
But you really want to get your source of omega-3s, the longer chain omega-3s that have the high levels of EPA and DHA. That's going to come from some sort of marine source.
Like, what about krill oil?
Not high in omega-3s necessarily. And again, it's the real key that when people hear about omega-3, we hear so much about it as related to the heart because we do know that it reduces blood pressure, it reduces triglycerides, it lowers risk of sudden death, arrhythmia. But the wonderful thing about omega-3 is that it has impact on every single cell in the body because the membranes of every cell, and we have trillions of cells in our body, the membranes of every cell are made up of fat.
Yeah,
and it's the good type of fat. It's the omega-3s and omega-6s.
Yeah.
However, just like with cholesterol, we need a little bit of cholesterol to live and to function. It's absolutely imperative, but too much is a bad thing. The same principle applies to omega-6. We have so much omega-6 in our westernized diet and so little omega-3 that what should be a 1-to-1 balance is not. There's an imbalance of about 14 or 16 to 1 is what most of the experts estimate. So we need to really focus on lowering the omega-6 consumption, which is primarily pro-inflammatory after a certain point, and then increasing our omega-3s.
And what are the omega-6s?
Most people never really focus. Most consumers, and I talk to a lot of people on a regular basis, they're not really aware of the EPA and the DHA, and that's really what you're looking for.
Yeah, and what are the omega-6s? What are those sources?
The omega-6s are you're going to find in just about anything that's processed. You find it certainly in red meat. You find it in anything that is man-made.
And when you think about walk the aisles of our grocery stores, virtually everything is man-made. But the biggest offender of the omega-6s, generally speaking, are the soybean oils and the added oils that go into processed food. Salad dressing is generally very, very high in omega-6s.
Yeah, interesting. And finally, Todd, with Whitthorn, what role does exercise play in all this? How does exercise affect C-reactive protein?
That's a great question. We've published, through our institute, we've published some papers indicating that those people that exercise regularly have lower levels of C-reactive protein than those that are sedentary.
Now, what does exercise regularly
mean? We've yet to answer the question, however, that exercise actually lowers it. So the question is it a marker or is it a cause? We suspect that it's a cause, that those that exercise will reduce levels of inflammation, and we certainly know that applies to, for instance, those that suffer from arthritis. Those that exercise more have lower inflammation. So we, you know, that it's not proven yet, but the intuitive feeling right now is that exercise will play a role in that, absolutely. And we certainly know that aerobic exercise will increase HDL, or that protective cholesterol that's so important.
It increases the body's own production of it. Now, by exercise, do you mean walking 2 or 3 miles a day? Is that enough, a 15-minute walk every day?
That's a great question. Our research institute houses the largest database on exercise in the world, so you've come to the right place for the answer to that. Exercise, what most people don't understand, it doesn't take nearly as much as the general public thinks. You don't have to run a marathon. You don't have to climb a mountain. One of our mottos is walk the dog, even if you don't have one. Regular walking, regular activity will have tremendous benefits, and there's hundreds of benefits to exercise. And again, the real message is that if you can cover 2 miles in 30 minutes by walking 3 days a week, you'll have tremendous benefit. If that's too fast and that's fine, you're going to have to walk a little more often. You can slow down a little bit. You walk 2 miles in 35 minutes 4 times a week, or you can walk even 2 miles in 40 minutes 5 times a week. But again, your answer to your question, walking is great. Anything you'll do that will increase movement is vital. The body was designed to move, to run and jump and play and fall and dance. And unfortunately, with our technology advancement, exercise activity has become optional. And unfortunately, most Americans are picking that option.
Yeah. And finally, we're talking with Todd Whitthorn with the CooperInst.org, the website. Todd, what about the politics of all this? Why are we hearing so much in the media and the press about these, for example, these statin drugs? A good friend of mine, in fact, a New York Times bestselling author, was on one of these drugs, and he thought he was dying. I mean, every muscle in his body was going. He couldn't stand up. He was in so much pain he couldn't sleep, and they took him off the drug and went away. We got about 30 seconds here. Why are we hearing so much about the drugs? We're not hearing so much about things like supplements and exercise.
Because the money's in the drug side, in the pharmaceutical industry, obviously. It's very, very difficult to patent a lot of the things that, in terms of natural solutions like nutritional supplements, and that's part of the challenge, and that's just...
So we just need to get the word out.
...that you shine a light on a regular basis.
Yeah, so we need to get the word out to people. Thanks a lot. Todd Whitthorn with Cooper Institute, CooperInst.org. We'll be right back 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
With a Workers' Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. In New York City last week, labor unions, food retailers, and small business owners came together to form a coalition to protest the construction of a Walmart in Queens in 2008. The coalition claims that Walmart sets a precedent of lower standards for hardworking men and women throughout the world. Rebecca Miles has the story.
At the press conference at New York City Hall, Brian McLaughlin, president of the New York City Central Labor Council, talked about his concerns over a Walmart being constructed in Queens.
You know, New York City is unique. It's a city of communities. In Queens County, where I come from, it's Flushing, it's Little Neck, it's Regal Park, it's Woodhaven, it's Ozone Park, it's Howard Beach, it's Maspeth, and in the other boroughs as well. And in a city where mass transit is essential, we know that Walmart comes to an area, undermines the competitors in that area with temporarily low prices. Once they destroy their competitors, people are forced to travel longer distances, and the theory of community is undermined. The quality of life in the community is undermined.
Walmart is the biggest private employer in the U.S. with 1 million workers. And while politicians welcome the hiring of new employees the retail giant represents, the jobs are short-term. For every two new hires, three jobs leave the community. Steve Barrison from the Small Business Congress had this to say.
Walmart has a history of being a bad neighbor in the communities in which they live. They have a history of mistreating their employees. They are the most sued company in America. There have been numerous violations of the way they have treated their workers. Do we need another box store? Do we need another employer coming in here and instead of adding to our communities, draining our communities?
200 communities across the country have already said no to Walmart. So what will Mayor Bloomberg and the City Council decide? For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
And if you do, don't let them run for president.
Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks.
Well,
make
that's
them
okay.
Be doctors and lawyers and such.
No, it's not necessary. And there's nothing wrong with
Mama,
guitars.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
Really, it should be, Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be Republicans. That's where the real danger is. Welcome back, my friends. Did you know that Bill Clinton's second inaugural, maximum donation, $100. Maximum donation, the most you could give to be part of Bill Clinton's second inaugural, all the festivities and what, $100. George W. Bush, $250,000. Did you know also that corporations are allowed to give money, but labor unions are not? Now, isn't that strange? This is from today's Wall Street Journal. On page A4, Bush Gala. Inaugural gala is a big-ticket affair, hoping to gain goodwill. Corporations write checks to help bankroll four-day party. I mean, this is the headline. And this article by Jeannie Cummings, or maybe it's Jean, I'm not sure. Scores of these companies, she says, corporations put the brakes on big political giving last year, but scores of them are now racing to bank some last-minute goodwill with President Bush by underwriting his second inauguration. Nearly 90 corporations have given more than $12 million to finance the four-day party that includes 9 inaugural balls and 3 dinners with Mr. Bush and other high-ranking White House officials. This is showing a bit of a loophole here in the law. It's really quite remarkable. Corporate executives say they are taking part in a major moment in the nation's democracy. It's the selling of the nation. I'm sorry. She notes, President Ronald Reagan is credited with revamping the occasion, adding parties and shifting precedents. Proceedings to the U.S. Capitol's West Front to make a better television image. His first inauguration cost a then-historic $19.4 million, and the second was just about the same. So, once again, another great conservative innovation. We can thank Ronald Reagan for it, taking us back to the days of the Gilded Age, when the rich ruled America and everybody else was terrified and poor. Home Depot gave $100,000 to the Republican convention, $250,000 to the inauguration. How much to the Democrats' convention? Not one penny. Same for Peabody Energy Corporation, International Paper Company, UST Inc., a tobacco company, also among the Republican-only big givers, according to the Wall Street Journal. But labor unions are banned. Now, don't even think about it if you represent ordinary working people. Not welcome. At the White House gala. Is this mind-boggling? Absolutely mind-boggling. Anyhow, thanks a lot for being with us today. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are